Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. I am so excited to reintroduce you to my friend Jim Hansen, who is now working with the Middle East Forum. And that's, is that MEF.org? Is that correct, Jim?
MEforum.org.
MEforum.org. And Jim, it's been a while since we had a chance to catch up. So I'm just absolutely thrilled that you're here today.
Well, dude, you are one of the OG bloggers like me. I mean, we go all the way back to when it was Instapundit, Glenn Reynolds, Michelle Malkin started Hot Air.
Absolutely.
You know, we still run very quite well. And we had Black Five, where I was Uncle Jimbo. And I mean, that was where the blogosphere was born. So it's good to be back with you, my brother.
Those were the days, brother. I'm
telling you. We were renegades. We were running wild.
We'd show up at CPAC and not give a damn. And
well, I still do that.
Hang out and do all sorts of crazy stuff that we can't talk about these days. So it's still confidential, still being held close to the chest. Speaking of close to the chest, though, we're here to talk about what's happening in Iran, what's happening around Iran. And you know, this is something that we've been talking about, obviously, for 47 years. I was 16 when they took the hostages in November of 1979. And it's really been a war with Iran at various levels, sometimes hot, sometimes not, during the entire 47 years. And so we've come down to this now where it looks like we are in position to affect at least some sort of momentum towards regime change. Obviously, we're not going to be putting boots on the ground there, but I want to talk about what we're actually building out there and what the options are. And I can't think of anybody better to talk about that than with you.
We're building some giant cans of whoop ass is what we're building out there. they call them 90,000 tons of diplomacy is, you know, what you call the aircraft carriers sometimes.
Yes.
But in this case, I think the diplomacy has faltered because the Iranians were never negotiating in good faith. And I think they have angered the Donald. I think they have, embarrassed him because he made some statements about the protesters and what would happen if they broke down on them. And they killed tens of thousands of them after he said that. So I don't think there's a lot of sympathy for them. And the only real question is, is it going to be a teach them a lesson kind of strike, which is one of the options, or is it going to be a pound them until the regime cries uncle, you know, and taps out? I'm hoping for the second, but I think that still remains to be seen.
Well, right now, and this is what I would say is the difference. When Donald Trump drew the red line, we really only had the capability to deal with that first option, the demonstration option. We're going to kick you once in the butt and see if morale improves, sort of thing. Now we have pretty much all of the options. And I think one of the most interesting aspects of this is the appearance of the aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. And of all places, TASS originally made the point, and this is before the Lincoln Task Force got out there, which is that the Americans could have done all the offensive capabilities that they wanted with the destroyers that happened to be in and around the Straits of Hormuz, but the aircraft carriers provide layers of defense as well as many more options for offense, obviously. So what does it say that we're sending two carrier groups out there? The USS Gerald Ford group is probably going to get out there somewhere in the next 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say?
It basically tells the Iranians, you can't hide. You know, I mean, there is nothing they own, nothing they love, nothing they value that can't be destroyed in a moment. You know, I mean, when during the last ones, the Israeli strikes and then Operation Midnight Hammer, they got shown we can fly a missile in through your bedroom window and kill you while you're sleeping.
Right.
So I don't think there's anything they can do, and they don't have any legitimate air defense to defend anything. So the question then becomes, how can they retaliate? And to your point, those aircraft carriers and the carrier strike groups have a lot of air defenses to defend themselves. But if you bring those up close enough, they can also help defend our bases in the area and other things. So when the Iranians decide, okay, whatever happened to us, we're going to retaliate, the secondary function of follow-on strikes and or air defense capabilities, in addition to all the other ground-based stuff we brought in there, and we brought a ton of air defense stuff in there. It's not real easy to kill Americans or destroy American stuff right now in the Middle East.
What is the, this is one of the most interesting aspects of this, because in the very first hours of the 12-day war, and bear in mind, this is mostly, in fact, it was entirely Israel. It was just Israel and Iran. We were doing some backup defensive, missile defense for them, but we weren't engaged in offensive operations in Iran until the very end when Donald Trump ordered the strikes on the three nuclear facilities in Iran. And Israel was able to wipe out their air defenses almost immediately, achieve air supremacy almost, within hours. I'm not even sure that the Iranians put it air put airplanes, fighters in the air against them. They may have kept them on the ground. And that was just
Underground,
Israel.
yeah.
Yeah, underground, right? Yeah, so that they couldn't be hit. Do you think that the Iranians give up the air defenses similarly? And if they don't, what's the exponential offensive capability that would be facing them with an American-led attack as opposed to an Israeli attack?
The nice thing about the Israelis is we have a wonderful agreement where we give them our best stuff and we do a trade. They get money, they buy our toys with it. So it helps defense industry. It's a very productive relationship, and they build a lot of cool stuff themselves. A lot of the best tech we've got came through Israeli R&D. So they have some capabilities, but not really the full range of stuff that we do. There's no question that we can go in and take out whatever, Iranian air defenses they've reconstituted since that point and hit the targets we want to hit. So then it becomes a question of what do we want to hit and what message are we trying to send? Is this the topple the regime? Is this the hit them hard enough and then encourage the opposition groups inside? Maybe, who knows, the CIA is bringing weapons to the Kurds and other people who have already basically uprisen pretty hard. The Kurds almost seceded, at the very beginning
Right.
of this. They said, we're not playing with you guys anymore, and started kicking people out. So the prospects of toppling the regime are there. I think it would be a shame to miss this opportunity because this is a U.S. strategic interest to end this regime and let prosperity and security to that region become the norm, not the Iranian destruction.
Right. Here's the question. You mentioned what is it that you hit? The Wall Street Journal late last night, I wrote about it this morning. Had a sort of an exclusive, I guess they called it an exclusive, which was that Donald Trump was considering just a limited first strike, more or less a demonstration strike, maybe a little bit, maybe a robust demonstration strike, basically going after a few discrete regime targets as a means of kicking their butts. We talked about this earlier. The problem that I see with this is certainly an option. Donald Trump today actually acknowledged that. Yes, that's one of the options we're considering if we decide to use military action, which again, I don't think is a big surprise. But in my mind, it makes no sense because the big risk to the forces that we have arrayed in that theater now are the ballistic missiles. And I would think that the very first thing you have to do is go after the ballistic missiles because you want to degrade as much of that as you can up front so that you don't waste your anti-ballistic missile defenses, in that first wave. If they are able to fire these things off in a full volley, you're going to have to use a lot of your ABM defenses. You're going to use up a lot of that. I don't know if you call it ammunition or shells or whatever you want to call it. You're going to use a lot of that, and you're going to run into an issue that the Israelis and we did in the 12-day war, which was that we started to run out of some of that stuff, and some of those missiles ended up getting through. So, do you see that as a, do you see a, like IRGC facility strikes, a limited spread as a rational decision for a first strike, or do you think that the ballistic missile systems, the launchers, and the command centers that control them, that, to me, that would make more sense in a first strike?
I don't see how they aren't part of either package. you know, we may not have said that and may not talk about it publicly, but for the reason you just laid out, you know, we have a limited number, and having to use them, it's asymmetrically costly. You know, our interceptors are vastly more expensive than their garbage missiles. You
Right.
know, so there we have to shoot them down, and we have to deal with it. So there's no reason to not do that, regardless of what you're demonstrating, for the simple fact that you don't want those in play going forward. I would say the rationale for a limited strike is President Trump doesn't want this to escalate. He has bent over backwards and done everything he can to negotiate a deal. And it's a real deal. You know, it's not an Obama Iran deal. He's
Well, this is
saying
it,
we'll
right? This is the
do it for real.
JCPOA. That's what Iran keeps saying that they want. They're talking today, Abbas
Not
Arachi
happening.
is saying, oh, well, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years of limited enrichment. And that's not the deal that Trump
No.
wants. That's the JCPOA again.
And the last thing he's going to do is let anybody claim that he shot down Obama's Iran deal and then redid it years later. No, that's not going to happen. And it would be a bad idea. It was the worst deal ever. So any deal would require the end of the nuke program, the end of the ballistic missiles, and the end of the proxy warfare in the region. Absent that, there's no deal to be made, and the scunion will be dropped upon them and try to, you know, see what happens next. So I don't think there's any question. And he also wants to make the point that if you don't negotiate with me in good faith and you disrespect the United States in a life or death negotiation, not like trade negotiations, but in a life or death situation like this, you're going to
In
pay.
trade negotiations too, Jim.
Well, sometimes, maybe not as many missiles, but you know,
Right,
some
yeah.
nuclear tariffs. But in this case, he's got to show the rest of the tyrants that you don't want to play games with Donald Trump if you're sitting across the table. Take us seriously, or you know, the next thing you'll be feeling is an explosion.
Jim, what is the this is sort of a spanner in the works, sort of a late spanner in the works, the conflict between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump regarding Diego Garcia. I don't know exactly what the legal parameters of this are. There's apparently some conflict as to whether or not Starmer can even deny us the use of Diego Garcia for this operation, but apparently he's tried to deny us the use of that. The Saudis have already said that they would prefer that we didn't use their airspace. And I think we're trying to keep the Saudis on, you know, on side here. We're probably a lot more likely to work with the Saudis than maybe with Keir Starmer here.
Sad state of affairs.
It is that state of affairs. What is the state of affairs with Diego Garcia? That's a B-2, you know, obviously a stealth bomber platform there that we would normally like to use for something like this. I know we have other options, but are
Yeah,
we
but they're
going
getting more
to
complicated.
abide
You
by
know, that's
this?
just it. Why would our supposed ally want to make something we're going to do, whether they say yes, no, or indifferent? It's like when Turkey denied us the northern route into Iraq, you know,
Right.
and stopped a pincher move. It was really a horrible thing to do to a supposed ally. The Brits are not the country they once were. You know, they might at this point, maybe it's the fact that they've decided to become an Islamist nation. You know, at this point,
Yeah.
they feel more affinity to Iran than to the United States. They are a shell of what they used to be. However, that shell, if it actually tries to cause us trouble like that, we have a lot more ways to make their lives miserable than they do to make ours miserable. And I would not. Stand, I would bet against Keir Starmer holding firm to that. If we say, no, we're going to use Diego Garcia, what's he going to do anyhow? You know,
That's a good
he
point.
hasn't got
Yeah.
anything to oppose it with. And if he's doing that, he's already burnt all the goodwill we're willing to let him have.
Well, refresh my memory. The B-2 missions that took out the Iranian nuclear facilities in June, did those originate from Diego Garcia? Or did they? I think they originated elsewhere, right? I think
Yeah,
we
we did the
originated
long
those
route. I
elsewhere.
mean, we went the long
Yeah.
way with them, did the refuelings, and I believe they landed at Diego before they went back home. But
Yes,
again,
that's right.
you
I do
know,
recall that. Yeah.
and that was just because it was such, you know, this one was given a we're telling you what's coming because we want you to cave. You know, this was not a secret to anyone. The bad things are coming. please make a smart decision or we will destroy you. The first time it was, oh, boom, whoa, where did that come from? You know, that was a.
Well, I think the other issue here too is that that was a one-off mission. They were only going to do it once. And Trump made it clear when the bomb damage assessments came through that the mission had succeeded and they didn't need to do a second run on it. So they didn't need to keep going back and forth from Diego Garcia. In this case, though, they probably would if what we're looking at in terms of the collection here, we're probably, if we go full throttle here, we're probably looking at least a few weeks of serious sorties into Iran.
If it's the regime ending or, you know, toppling kind of situation, that could take a while. You know, and it should be, you know, there'll be talks with the opposition leaders and all that, which are already going on.
Right.
It'll be more coordinated. And then the trouble now is finding out who will take over if the regime does either topple or agree to go into exile. There are discussions there and some decisions, I think, have been made. But it's going to be a longer, you know, situation. And I think you're right that that's when we would need the bases in the area, as opposed to, you know, because carrier missions are not what we're looking at here for the major stuff. That's going to come from Tomahawks and heavy bombers.
Right. The destroyers can handle the Tomahawks.
Yeah, they
can. And the heavy bombers have to have some sort of land base in order to do that. Let's talk and let's finish up on the idea of what comes next. Because one of the things that I'm concerned about, Jim, because I'm a worrywart and this is what I do for a living, right? I'm a worrywart. Is that we're looking at a situation, you know, people talk about Iraq 2003. That's, you know, the Wall Street Journal, biggest buildup since Iraq 2003. And of course, there's all sorts of ironies to that because Donald Trump was famously opposed to that. But I'm a little bit more worried about Libya 2011, where we went in and did the remote control regime change, got rid of Gaddafi, who, by the way, was cooperating with the U.S. So that's not analogous. He was actually working with us at that point in time, to some extent. Certainly much more so than the Iranians are. And then you end up with a failed state where you have basically warlords and terror networks now that are in control. Libya is basically Tripoli and, you know,
the Wild West.
Here there be giants sort of thing on the map. What is the risk of a failed state? Even if you force the regime out, what's the risk of a failed state in Iran, where you've got warlords of various Islamist sympathies that are controlling some areas and you know, Democrats controlling others, small d Democrats, folks. I'm not talking about Nancy Pelosi.
Nancy Pelosi, right?
Nancy Pelosi.
Because she's the one. She's the one I'd watch. No, it is a distinct problem, and it's something that's complicated by the fact that the Iranians have trouble not infighting among themselves.
Right.
You know, you've got Reza Pahlavi, who really, 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 really wants to be the next guy, but is not likely to be the next guy. So he doesn't have enough support in the country. He has support among the expats who love him the most. Inside the country, those opposition groups have difficulty coming together, but they have done a much better job, especially since Midnight Hammer, of deciding, you know, maybe anything is better than this. And I'll give you my thought on what the most likely scenario is based on discussions with people in the country and other things. That there is likely to be, if the regime topples or if there is a surrender to be made, someone from the regime will need to stay in power long enough to conduct a referendum to end their current constitution, to choose a new form of government, and to set elections. Because none of the opposition groups can do that. You know, we can hate the regime all we want, but they own the bureaucracy. You can't just instantly replace that and hold a nationwide election in a large country like Iran.
Right.
So there are some names floated around, Pezeshkian, the current guy. I've heard Rouhani, other people like that, who could be the guy who sits in the chair, who sets the date, and who waits to be voted out of office. And then whoever comes next. Via a choice of the Iranian people, who are overwhelmingly in favor of some sort of democratic republic style government.
Yeah, you know, maybe especially the commercial class, you know, the bazaar class, right? Which is one of the big changes this year from previous is that the merchant class had never really gotten behind the idea of getting rid of the regime, because they were one of the beneficiaries.
Money collapsed, your currency collapses, and you no longer have a bizarre class to do anything. So the lack of money in the end is what is going to have taken this to the best tipping point anybody's seen. And God willing, the creek don't rise. I think we, 6 months from now, could have somebody else running that country.
So let me ask you this, as the exit question, if you will. When do you expect to see action? Because I think that they're going to wait till the Ford gets on scene, only because there's no real rush. Mm-hmm. There's nothing acute that's happening in the country at the moment, at least, that it requires an intervention. Trump has some time now to pick and choose his moment. But does he? Is it this weekend? Is it next weekend? Is it the weekend after that? What's your feeling on when the time runs out on Jaja and Trump starts to look at war?
Well, you know, you saw what happened last time. He gave a deadline and all of a sudden, well, we might have gone a little early. You know, it wouldn't surprise me. We don't need another carrier strike group to do this. You know, so it would be a great Jedi mind trick if I was them to go early and then have that steaming in for round two and whatever, and that way catch everybody off guard, because they can only mobilize so many times. I think you're probably right, though, just because Trump wants them to cave. You know, this could get messy. They could dump a couple tankers and close Straits of Hormuz. You know, there's bad things they could do that will put the administration in the position of now they actually have a war instead of a controlled set of airstrikes to do a particular mission. So I think they will probably wait to have the full array arrayed against it and take care of it then. But you know, if I started hearing explosions right now, it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's a non-zero chance of it being this weekend, even though Trump's saying 10 days. Right? Yeah, like you said, we went early in June of last year too. So
yes, we did.
Yeah, Trump likes the head fake. And you know who else likes the head fake is Jim Hansen. He's always up for a good head fake. Middle East Forum, meforum.org. I got that correct this time, Jim. And Jim, do you have any other links that you want to share with people so they can find you in particular?
Jim Hansen DC is where I am on X, and that's where I do most of my jaw flapping. You know, since I unmasked Uncle Jimbo and became myself, I can still get away with quite a bit. It's kind of fun. That's part of the enjoyment of working for yourself, is nobody except my wife can tell me, don't do that. And she's a retired lieutenant colonel. I tend to listen to her.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, you definitely have to salute that. So absolutely.
Amen. Well,
Jim Hansen, thank you so much. It's so much fun to get back together with you on this discussion. We have got to do this more often. We should talk about ways to do that. Always a blast. Thank you so much for being here.
A pleasure, Ed. Keep trucking. Love hot air and love town hall.